To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for an investigation into some of the most zealous and fervently loyal of Marines to have ever fought against the enemies of all mankind. There are many servants to the Imperium, ranging from the impassioned Sisterhood to the unbreakable lines of the Guard, and even to the enigmatic cohorts of the Mechanicus. But none quite hold the strict allegiances and fearless resolve of the Angels of Death. The Space Marines are no secret to the Imperium, though, in truth, the vast majority of citizens will only ever hear of them as mythic heroes, never seeing one in the flesh with their own eyes. This, of course, is for good reason. As the Astartes exist only to eradicate the myriad horrors of the galaxy, and given how apocalyptic this era has been, it is understandable that they have very little time for parading about on worlds wrapped in the warm embrace of peace. The true place for a Marine is out on the battlefield, half buried beneath a sea of the alien dead, armor rent and blasted, bolt gun in hand, slaying the beasts who would so readily consume the entirety of the galaxy without thought nor care. There are around 1,000 chapters of the Space Marines known to exist within the Imperium, which have each diverged, sometimes quite wildly, to develop their own unique tactics, cultures, and views upon the galaxy at large. Some, such as the rambunctious Space Wolves, are known to be rather rebellious to the stuffy Lords of Terror, whereas others, such as the Exorcists, have shrouded their chapter in an air of mystery so as to conceal the darkest secrets and heresies of their brothers. Nevertheless, they are both, as with all chapters, unwaveringly loyal to the Emperor and to the wider Imperium, yet there are none who are as avid nor fervent in their beliefs as the subject to today's investigation, the Black Templars. First formed in the wake of the Horus Heresy, the Templars are defined by their fanatical zeal and rigid faith in the Emperor of Mankind, with their chapter having sworn themselves upon an eternal crusade to purge the galaxy of the alien, the mutant, and the heretic. The pitiless knights seem to hold no peer in their sheer hatred for all things inhuman, and their unquestionable devotion to the Imperial Creed is matched only by the shocking ferocity with which they smite the enemies of man. But for today, we will be broadly covering the lore to this chapter, beginning with their founding tale, before moving on to explore their culture and beliefs in more detail. We will then look through their organizational structure, of their tactics in battle, and then finally, with a brief timeline, covering some of the more notable of campaigns launched by the Crusading Brothers. But without further ado, now seems to be the perfect time for us to begin. The Marines hold no true home, for the call of war has forced them to pledge their souls to the eternal crusade, and so we must venture into the most hostile of battlefields, hoping to find the crusading fleets of the Black Templars. The Black Templars were originally formed as a successor chapter to the Imperial Fists, though their origin tale is one which almost sparked a second civil war within the already battered Imperium. Their story begins in the terrible aftermath of the Horus Heresy, where the arch-traitor had been defeated, the traitorous legions routed from Terra, and where the broken Emperor was now permanently interned upon the Golden Throne. In order to prevent another conflict of this scale, Robut Gilliman drafted the Codex Astartes, a guiding tome for the Marines, which decreed that no legion should ever again number in the tens of thousands as they had during the Great Crusade. Instead, each legion would be divided into smaller, independent chapters, numbering around 1,000 Marines strong, in the hopes that it would prevent any individual from ever wielding the singular military might that Horus held during his Great War. Rogel Dorn, however, greatly objected to this decree, seeing it as a needless insult and as something which presupposed the Marines as harboring the potential for heresy. Taking it personally, he decried Gilliman as a coward for not aiding in the defense of Terra. And before long, the surviving Primarchs had formed two sides, with half supporting the implementation of the Codex Astartes and half being against. This was not a simple disagreement by any means, and in fact, it seemed as though a second civil war was all but inevitable, with the Imperial Navy even going so far as to fire upon the Fists in the false belief that their defiance signified a betrayal of the Emperor. Dorn, not wishing to see the Imperium consumed by war, finally backed down and agreed to split his legion into four chapters, with one remaining as the Imperial Fists, and the three successors being the Soul Drinkers, the Crimson Fists, and the subject of our investigation, the Black Templars. The Templars were to be commanded by Dorn's most devoted and decorated captain, Sigismund. As first captain of the Imperial Fists, Sigismund had earned unparalleled renown during the Siege of Terra, where he fought as the Emperor's champion, cutting down a slew of the mightiest barbarians of Chaos, all in single combat. Now entrusted with his own chapter, he was to take the most zealous and pious of Dorn's sons, adopting the black and white livery that Sigismund himself had worn upon Terra, and to take to the stars in what would become their eternal crusade. The new marshal had no intention of following the Codex Astartes, as he agreed with his Primarch that it was an overly restrictive and inefficient guide. But his new warpath had been specifically drafted as a means of proving his chapter's loyalty, as he understood that non-compliance could possibly be interpreted as a mark of heresy. In any event, the Templars promptly left from Terra, claiming no home world, and vowing to remain within their fleet forevermore, always on the move and always on the path of a new crusade, ever expanding the Emperor's light throughout the stars. They would go on to participate in the Scouring, purging the traitor forces of the Donatello system, before pursuing them towards the boundary of the Eye of Terra. Sigismund realized that someday the heretics would emerge once more to wage a new war against the Imperium, and so the Templars stationed a crusading force around the Cadian Gate so as to immediately respond to the emergent threats of Chaos. Indeed, it was during the latter half of the 31st millennium that Abaddon launched his first Black Crusade, an invasion which was halted at the cost of Sigismund's own life. The Marshal entered into a fated duel with the Despoiler, ultimately falling beneath the new War Master, though somewhat surprisingly, Abaddon returned his undesecrated body to the Imperium, perhaps as a sign of personal respect to the old champion. Nevertheless, his death did not dissuade the Templars, as every High Marshal would go on to swear the same oath as Sigismund, to continue in their eternal crusade, and to prove their loyalty by never resting in the great hunt against the many enemies of mankind. At their heart, the Black Templars are perhaps the ultimate personification of the Astartes moniker as the Angels of Death. Each brother has sworn his oaths of vengeance against the darker powers of the Void, and has proven that they will purge the enemies of man with unrelenting fury, showing nothing in the way of mercy to those who would seek to supplant mankind as the dominant species of the galaxy. It is true that every chapter will seek to purge the unclean, but none are quite as hateful nor extreme in their methods as the Templars. For one thing, they are religious fanatics, which is quite a rare trait among the Astartes, as the majority of chapters will frown upon the idea that the Emperor is a living god. Most Marines will revere the Emperor as the peerless leader of humanity. But to the Templars, he is a true deity who must be worshipped and who must be offered up with the sacrifices claimed in the field of war. There is no room for questioning in one's beliefs, nor time to consider the consequences of such dogmatic conviction, as even the lowliest of neophytes must be righteous paragons of their imperial faith, doing whatever is necessary to venerate the immortal emperor. Nothing will be seen as too extreme, no deed too abhorrent, as the Templars will spill blood on an unimaginable scale, massacring entire star systems, burning down civilizations, but it will all be seen as justified if performed in the Emperor's name. Still, their faith is their shield and their hatred their weapon, just as important as any bolter, chainsword, or heavy flamer. But along with their devout worship of the Emperor comes a sense of absolute intolerance for anything and everything that may be perceived as impure or blasphemous. The Templars suffer not the alien, the mutant, nor the heretic, showing no mercy nor remorse when dealing with such foes. Any Xenos, from the most brutally barbaric orc war boss down to the most insignificant Tau farmer of the Earth caste, will be seen as a disgusting affront to the Emperor's chosen species, being humanity, obviously, and thus they will be exterminated without pause. Mutants, being humans twisted by genetic deviation or warp exposure, are despised as the grotesque reminders of mankind's fallibility, and should similarly be purged on sight. The Templars consider even relatively stable abhuman strains, such as the three-eyed navigators or the giant ogrins, with outward suspicion, if not outright disgust. Heretics and traitors, however, hold a special place of hatred in the hearts of the Templars, and they will be prosecuted with the most intense enmity of all. In some ways, their chapter culture will mirror that of the Inquisition, in that they would rather see a world reduced to rubble than to allow even the smallest seed of heresy to take root. Countless tales have been told of their ruthless nature, but compassion for the guilty is seen as the greatest of cruelties to the innocent, and so they will spare none and purify all in the Emperor's name. There is an idea that the Templars could be considered as continuing with the task laid out to the original Marines during the Great Crusade, where they were to cleanse the stars and pave a course for the Imperium to spread. In addition to this, they are also one of the few chapters who continue to abide by the Emperor's original decree at Nicaea, in that they have banned the recruitment of psykers and do not hold any librarians within their ranks. It is quite an interesting point to realize that most chapters are technically defying the direct word of the Emperor by utilizing librarians. But despite their clear benefits, the Templars have chosen to shun their use and still maintain that psykers are impure fiends to be purged, not fostered. At the most, they will permit navigators and astropaths aboard their ships, though these mutants are held on a very short leash, being more akin to slaves than necessary allies. Because of their dogmatic beliefs, The Black Templars will scrutinize their potential crusading paths to determine as to whether or not the potential lives saved actually deserve to be graced with their support. If a marshal judges your world as not entirely pure, or believes that the planetary governors are wavering in their faith, then the Templars may decide to attack, decapitating both the original invaders and the weak lords, before instituting a stricter governance so as to restore order once more. Of course, if an ecclesiastical world calls for aid, then there will be no questions asked, as the Templars see the shrine worlds of the Imperium as being central to their faith in the Emperor, and they will gladly lay down their lives in protection of these sacred sites. In fact, some of their recent campaigns have taken place during the so-called Shrine World Crusades, where several forces were dispatched to secure various holy worlds throughout the Segmentum Solar and Pacificus. But on this point, we must now ask ourselves a question, and it is that since this is not a Codex-compliant chapter, then how many Marines do they actually possess? The most important point to understand on the Black Templars is, of course, that they do not adhere to the Codex Astartes in any capacity. Now, this has been permitted partly because they have proven themselves for nearly 10 millennia now as remaining loyal to the Imperium, but also because it would be rather hard to track them down to render justice, since they are a fleet-based chapter and are always on the move. But in any event, they are not bound by the traditional limit of 1,000 Marines, and though only the High Marshal knows of their true strength, some estimates have claimed that they hold around 5,000 battle brothers spread between the various crusading fleets. The aforementioned High Marshal is the equivalent to their chapter master, with the title currently held by Helbrecht, and his role is to oversee the myriad crusades and to ensure that the chapter upholds its honor and faith in the Emperor. The Templars are also not bound by the typical structure of a chapter, and so they will eschew the standard 10-company setup of the Marines, instead organizing their forces into crusades, which are essentially large detachments of brethren assigned to a particular campaign. Each crusade will be led by a marshal and attached to a crusading fleet, allowing them to easily traverse the stars to promptly arrive at their target. There is no strict size requirement, nor limit, to a crusade, and they can sometimes comprise of only a few dozen brothers, whereas the largest will boast several thousand, though these are incredibly rare and seldom seen. The size all depends on the nature of their conflict, of the prior commitments of the chapter, and of the duration of the expected campaign, where the Templars might assign more Marines if they foresee a rather protracted and bloody war. But regardless, the crusading forces will be split into smaller divisions known as fighting companies, usually of equal size to one another, along with sufficient support equipment and auxiliary logistical staff. The Marines may choose which fighting company to join, and this selection is typically based upon fraternal bonds between the battle brothers, so Templars with shared battlefield experience will usually flock together, elevating their combat effectiveness within the field. As a result of this, however, companies might be formed from quite an unusual admixture of Marines, with strange squad variants, which on paper would appear to be quite inflexible, yet it is from their bonds of brotherhood that they find their unbreakable shields, and from their zealotry, their unstoppable swords. The marshals, in charge of the overarching crusade, will assign castellans to command the companies, though both figures will be expected to fight upon the field, bringing the flaming justice of the Emperor along with their subordinate brothers. The backbone of a Templar force will typically consist of several Crusader squads, which are unusual in that they often contain a mixture of fully-fledged Marines along with a scattering of neophytes. These scouts will serve as the squires to their senior brother, assisting the Marine in whatever duties are required, whilst also learning from their deeds, preparing them for the point where they too may arise as a true battle brother to the chapter. Among the chapter's warriors, the veteran elite are known as the Sword Brethren, who are somewhat analogous to the veterans of a traditional Codex chapter, though they will not be lumped into a specialized first company, and rather, they will remain within their original crusading force. But the Sword Brothers will be tasked with a multitude of roles, ranging from commanding a crusader squad as a sergeant, to acting as the personal bodyguard to a marshal, or even serving in a specialized squad of veterans to break their foes wherever they stand. When a new castellan, or even marshal is required, they will invariably be drawn from the ranks of the Sword Brethren, as they will already possess some experience in commanding over a force, and will have proven themselves as a heroic veteran of a dozen deadly campaigns. Since they are constantly on a warpath, it is not uncommon for the marshals to never meet with their high marshal, or to even meet with their contemporaries, but this is no matter to the Templars, who are content with waging their eternal crusade as semi-autonomous armies. If, however, the chapter is faced with an era-defining conflict, such as was the case for the Third War for Armageddon, or Gouge Vandyr's suspected heresy, then the High Marshal may summon all of his subordinates for a council meeting upon his flagship of the Eternal Crusader. Here, they will vote for the chapter's course of action, though most often they will quickly agree to the decision which brings punitive war in a prompt and righteous manner. The Black Templars boast a notable roster of chaplains, far outnumbering that of a typical chapter. But given their piety, it is no wonder that the Marines feel the need to utilize these spiritual enforcers to great effect. Similarly, they sport a respectable number of tech Marines, who each watch over a surprising array of servitors, primarily made up of heretics and deviants, whose crimes earned them a lobotomized transformation into a thoughtless and soulless tool for the Marines. Legends say that the Templars will transfigure the senior lords to heretical worlds, meaning that some of their servitors will have once ruled as planetary governors, yet have since been reduced to disgusting amalgams of tainted flesh and purified steel. The most unique figure within the crusading forces, however, would surely be the individual known as the Emperor's Champion. The chapter believe that the Emperor, in all his divinity, will bless one of their brothers on the eve of battle, gracing him with the miracle of foresight, so that he may be guided through the chaos towards a certain victory. When this brother confesses to his vision, the chaplaincy will hurry him away, anointing him as the Emperor's champion to the coming battle, at which point he will be granted with the sacred armor of faith and the incomparable black sword. Armed and shielded by the relics of the chapter, he will become a righteous vessel of the Emperor's fury, channeling his might with each sweep and his hatred with each strike. Though it is a great miracle to witness the coming of a champion, it is also seen as a dark omen to the brothers, as if this figure is slain in battle. Then it is a sure sign that their crusade is destined to fail. In this case, the Marines must atone for their sins by retrieving the fallen relics by any means necessary, with there being reports of entirely new crusades being launched simply to recover the hallowed armor and ancient sword, from those who brought the prior crusade to its knees. On the battlefield, it is no wonder that this deeply zealous and fanatically devout chapter will fight with a level of righteous ferocity, perhaps only before seen amidst the ranks of the Emperor's sisterhood. They waste no time with effete subtlety, nor with cowardly ambushes, and would much rather opt for a thunderous assault, facing down the enemy eye to eye, so that they may see the darkness in the hearts of the heretic be illuminated beneath his undeniable wrath. Being a fleet-based chapter, it is no wonder that almost every Black Templar engagement begins with a period of heavy orbital bombardment, launched from the varied strike cruisers and battle barges suspended in low orbit. This initial phase of judgment will consist of cyclonic torpedoes, massed macro shells, and pinpoint lance strikes, aimed indiscriminately to sow devastation and terror into the hearts of the faithless. Before the smoke is given time to clear, the Templars will launch their first wave of attack, with hundreds of drop pods raining down through the atmosphere, slamming hard into the blasted earth, disgorging squad after squad of power-armored initiates and their neophyte squires. Sprinting through the chaos, the brothers will aim to attack hard and fast along the entirety of the field, overwhelming the enemy before they have a chance to retreat into some pathetic defensive formation. The Templars will not hesitate to deploy the majority of their forces during this phase, as they will favor the idea that a swift and hard blow may end what could become a protracted war of attrition, long before it truly begins. The mixed composition of their Crusader squads work to their advantage here, with the disproportionate numbers of heavily armored, melee-oriented Marines charging through the weak zones to tear apart the enemy from within, while the lighter and ranged, focused neophytes follow in their wake, bolt guns roaring as they exploit the breach. If the enemy shows stiff resistance, or possesses strongholds that cannot be taken by infantry alone, then the Templars will swiftly escalate by unleashing their armored spearheads. The chapter is particularly fond of the Crusader pattern of Land Raider, which they themselves discovered and adapted during the Gerulus Crusade from Dark Age Archaeotech. Its sponson-mounted las cannons are replaced with racks of hurricane bolters capable of unleashing a ceaseless hail of anti-infantry fire, whilst its hull-mounted frag launchers explode out in a concussive blast, providing the cover needed for the inbound crusaders to burst out deep within enemy lines. In any event, these land raiders will be deployed via Thunderhawk transport, along with predator tanks for heavy fire support, whilst bike squads and land speeders screech out to outflank vulnerable positions. Ultimately, however, the support will never be intended to entrench the Marines in a single position, as their primary strengths lie in the art of plunging hard and fast into the enemy before utterly annihilating them at point-blank range. I mentioned previously that each brother will be assigned a neophyte squire who will assist them in all of their necessary duties, but primarily they are there to be tutored in the art of war so as to prepare them for a life as a fully fledged Templar. Outside of a battle, they might be tasked with cleaning and anointing their master's power armor, but during a conflict, they must fight as a warrior of the Emperor, purging the enemies of man with the righteous indignation of an angel of death. After proving themselves through many trials of combat, then a chaplain may anoint them as worthy enough to don their own suit of armor, allowing them to ascend to the rank of initiate, and as a true battle brother of the Adeptus Astartes. Returning to the tactics of the Templars, we should mention that it is not uncommon for a brother to wish to be free from the task of wardship, in which case he will voluntarily join with a specialist squad, such as the Aggressors or Outriders, to which neophytes are not yet permitted to join. It is far more common for the Marines to seek brotherhood in the roles which are more oriented towards melee combat, or of those which will take them closer to the front lines, as opposed to more support-focused roles, like with desolation squads. Again, this is because the Templars are so fiercely zealous that they wish to levy the incandescent wrath of the Emperor with their own two hands, favoring the glory of plunging one's sword into the heart of a traitor and seeing the life essence drain from their bastard form. In the wake of a battle, it is permitted for the brothers to comb the field for relics seized from the lifeless corpses of their enemy. Of course, these will need to be purified and sanctified by the chaplaincy, who may simply ordain for the memento mori to be destroyed, if it appears blasphemous to the chapter. In its place, the brother may be bestowed with a traditional relic, such as the finger bone of an imperial saint, a purity seal written by a prominent priest, or in some rare occasions, a treasured weapon, once wielded in the hands of a chapter hero. As a final point, each and every Templar will spend a prolonged period before a coming battle in deep prayer, meditating on the glory of the God Emperor, drawing from his immortal majesty to elevate themselves as his angels of death. But during this time, they will also declare an unbreakable vow, heard by the Emperor himself, promising to themselves and to their battle brothers that they will know no fear in the face of the enemy. They are to abhor the witch and destroy the witch, to accept any challenge, no matter the odds, to suffer not the unclean to live, and above all else, to uphold the honor of the Emperor. Through the long millennia, the Black Templars have undertaken so many crusades that entire volumes can scarcely list them all. Countless worlds have been purged and restored to order under the guiding watch of a chapter keep, whilst innumerable warlords have been halted in their tracks and ruthlessly administered with the Emperor's justice. Before we outline some of their more notable of conflicts, I should mention that the Templars hold the full repository of their historical deeds within the Scriptorum of Truths upon the flagship of the Eternal Crusader. Unfortunately, however, the chaplaincy will periodically purge some of their ancient lore, casting millennia-old tomes into the fires, all in the pursuit of their own spiritual purity. It could easily be argued that their extreme fanaticism has taken a step too far, considering they are actively destroying elements of their own past. But there can be no use arguing with zealots, and no compromises reached with radicals. In any event, one of the earliest crusades launched by the Black Templars took place in the 32nd millennium, during a cataclysmic conflict known as the War of the Beast, where an enormous orc horde threatened to overrun Holy Terror itself. The invasion was launched on a scale not seen since the Horus Heresy, prompting the Imperial Fists to enact their desperate protocol of the Last Wall, which instructed all of the Sons of Dawn to return to Terra and to rejoin with their parental legion. The Templars, led by High Marshal Bohemond, amassed the varied successors and joined with the war effort upon Terra, eventually taking part in the climactic battle upon Ulanor, a world which would much later be renamed as Armageddon. Bohemond's command came to an end in the wake of the war after he was forced to confront a captain of the Fists Exemplar who had temporarily allied himself with a group of the Iron Warriors, claiming that they had contributed to the Imperial victory and that they deserved to leave in peace. The Templar, however, unrelenting in his hatred for all things chaotic, refused, and rather tragically, Zerberin of the Fists exemplar could not stand idle to this overly zealous judgment, prompting him to intervene and to cut down the Templar in order to save the Iron Warriors. Zerberin would go on to pledge himself to the Chaos Marines, as the Imperium rightfully branded him as a traitor, though he was no servant to the Dark Gods, and rather, he was simply forced to choose between a fanatical zealot and a proven ally. Around 2,000 years later, during the 34th millennium, the Black Templars took part in a crusade against the Catalexis heresy, which culminated in a catastrophic event known as the Howling. A true abomination, formed as an alien cyborg, possessing an immensely powerful connection to the warp, had arisen under the name Cacodominus, and was able to psionically enslave a vast swathe of Imperial space, forming a twisted empire of over 1,300 systems. The Templars responded, and eventually executed the Cacodominus. But as it fell, its death cry was amplified through the warp, rushing forth as a deafening wave, buffeting the tens of thousands of worlds of the wider segmentum. Billions of psychically sensitive humans died, with navigators and astropaths falling en masse, causing millions of ships to be cast adrift, forever lost within the maelstrom of the warp. Rumor has it that the death cry burnt out the minds of every last librarian within the Black Templars, and that the Howling marked the end of the Librarius to the Crusaders. I personally do not ascribe to this theory, and hold firm in the idea that they eschew the use of psychers because of the Emperor's decree at Nicaea, though you are all free to follow whichever explanation seems most fitting. In any event, the Templars retrieved the skull of the Cacodominus as a trophy, and it is said that if you listen closely, that you can still hear the wailing death cry of the cyborg beast, and that it still possesses the strength to devastate the minds of witches and psychers. Moving into the 36th millennium, the galaxy was racked by a period known as the Age of Apostasy, where the lecherous High Lord, named as Goge Vandyr, united the institutions of the Ecclesiarchy and the Administratum, making him the de facto ruler of the entire Imperium. Driven mad by power, he assassinated his fellow lords, fortified himself within the Ecclesiarchal Palace upon Terra, and summoned the recently formed Brides of the Emperor to destroy the Imperials, who dared question his rule. Branding him as a renegade, the Black Templars were one of the four chapters summoned to bring this rebellion to an end, joining with the assault on Terra, where they would gladly purge the traitors who dared defile the home of the Emperor. To the Marines, this conflict was known as the Terran Crusade, and was launched by the High Marshal Segenandus. But it primarily saw the zealous Templars fighting against the ardent Sisterhood, with both sides believing that the other had turned against the Emperor's wishes. In the end, Vandyr was executed by Alicia Dominica, bringing the rebellion to its bloody close, though the Templars promptly departed from Terra to continue in their crusade and to hunt down every last traitor that might still lurk within the stars. In the wake of this apostasy came a time now referred to as the Age of Redemption, which lasted until the 38th millennium and was defined by the growing power of the Imperial cult, who had declared a war on heresy, leading to the capturing and execution of suspected traitors on a truly monstrous scale. The Black Templars contributed to many of these campaigns, the most notable of which was known as the Benedictine War, where a crusade was launched against a series of Eldari worlds at the behest of the Ecclesiarchy. Unfortunately, the aliens were able to slay not one, but two High Marshals in quick succession, though their successor, a Marine known as Constantine, would go on to lead the Imperials on a relentless purge, slaying every last Eldari and putting their maiden worlds to the flame. Fast forwarding to the 41st millennium, entering into the Time of Ending, the Black Templars were to become embroiled in some of their most infamous and deadly of campaigns. In the year 990, Helbrecht, newly promoted as High Marshal, declared that the chapter would move to purge the menace of the Scythe of Fiends from the desolate reaches of the northeastern fringe, sparking what is now known as the Ghoul Stars Crusade. This region is primarily defended by the mysterious chapter of the Death Spectres, who have fought with the fiends many times and do not believe that they can ever be fully eradicated. Nevertheless, the two chapters reluctantly worked together, with the Templars begrudgingly ignoring the Spectres' defeatist attitude and the Spectres tolerating the fanatical presence of the Crusaders. When the Templars reached the homeworld to the fiends, they found it entirely deserted, as was predicted by the Death Spectres. But this did not prevent them from setting the upper atmosphere of the planet alight, aiming to bombard the gas giant until it was entirely burnt away. The Templars, however, could not remain to finish the job, as they had been called away to take part in the infamous Third War for Armageddon. And so they left the Ghoul Stars back in the hands of the Death Spectres, who have remained watchful for the fiends, knowing that they were certainly not exterminated. In any event, for Armageddon, the Black Templars committed three separate crusading fleets to contain the horde of Ghazghul's orcs, with High Marshal Helbrecht taking command over the entirety of the Space Marines upon the world. The Reclusiarch, known as Merrick Grimaldus, rose to fame during this war, being the sole survivor of the Hell's Reach Crusade, arising from the ruins of a fallen Hive city, though we have previously covered his story in our exploration into the Third War. Only a year later, the Templars would be seen fighting within the 13th Black Crusade, with Marshal Marius Amalric leading the brothers against Abaddon the Despoiler's unholy legions. Unfortunately, the forces of Chaos were successful in destroying the fortress world of Cadia, leading to the eruption of the Great Rift and the cleaving of the entire Imperium. Amalric went on to fight alongside the Ultramarines upon Macragg, as they attempted to revive Robut Gilliman. But rather sadly, the rest of his Templar brothers fell in battle, leaving him as the last crusader against the chaotic hordes. He would go on to join with a renewed Terran crusade, but in the end, Amalric died in a feat of astounding glory. He plunged the Black Sword of the Crusade into the heart of Skarbrand, exiled Bloodthirster of Khorne, and though he was viciously torn to shreds, the wound he inflicted was deep enough to allow Gilliman to finish the job and to banish the Hellspawn back into the chaos of the warp. With the dawn of the 42nd millennium, the Templars launched their Shrine World Crusades, aiming to protect the Emperor's holy sites from the foul encroachment of chaos. Some of these planets are incredibly significant to the Ecclesiarchy, such as San Leor, which was the original site to the Daughters of the Emperor, who would go on to become the fanatic military force of the Sisters of Battle. It was around this time that the creation of the Primaris Marines was revealed to the Astartes, with every chapter being sent a fleet to reinforce their heavy losses suffered during the prior millennium. High Marshal Helbrecht had approved this for the Templars, but when the newborn Marines rendezvoused with the forces of Marshal Angevin, all hell suddenly broke loose. The fanatical Templars declared that the Primaris Marines were impure, false bearers of the Emperor's name, and a mutiny erupted within their ranks. The Castellan, known as Beortnoth, rose up as the leader of the Puritans, slaying Marshal Angevin, his followers, all of the Primaris Marines, and even put down the member of the Custodian Guard, tasked with leading the Primaris fleet. In a moment of cowardice, rather than standing firm by his actions, Beortnoth wove a farcical tale that the reinforcements never arrived, and that Angevin had led a crusade to try and rescue their brothers, but tragically died in the process. The zealous Marines went on to rejoin the wider Imperial war effort and proved to play a pivotal role in securing victory within the Talladus system against the forces of Chaos. Guilliman, however, was suspicious at the claim that an entire Primaris fleet had been destroyed so easily, and so dispatched a group to investigate the Templar forces. Almost immediately, Beortnoth became aggressive with the investigators and demanded a trial by combat, claiming that the Emperor would prove him as innocent by guiding his hand to victory in a duel of honor. As expected, the Emperor did not favor the dishonest Templar that day, and the Castellan was struck down. But he was not put to death, and rather, he was deployed along with the rest of his fratricidal brothers to fight against the Word Bearers, a conflict which led him to his violent demise. As it so stands today, the chapter has almost entirely accepted the introduction of Primaris Marines, with the ill-fated Angevin Crusade representing a level of resistance which perhaps should have been expected from a chapter almost entirely defined by their fanatic extremism. With all that we have learnt, it is no wonder that there are some within the Imperium who look upon the Black Templars with a sense of unease. There are some inquisitors, particularly those of the puritanical belief, who worry that the unbridled zeal of the Crusaders may one day blind them, leading the chapter into an uncontrollable spiral, eventually targeting the very Imperium as heretical. The Space Marine chapters, who hold Guilliman's Codex Astartes sacrosanct, will occasionally regard the Templars as being dangerously independent, but none would ever dare speak out in protest, lest the Crusaders begin to question their cousin's faith. But many times the fanaticism of the Templars has actually driven the forces of the Imperium to perform greater feats of valor, inspired at the sight of the Emperor's chosen, fighting with a level of zealous ferocity that previously only existed in myth. For instance, during the Purgus Crusade, the superstitious populace of the Vatican enclaves believed that the righteousness of the Templars could have only come about from the direct influence of the Emperor himself, bringing them to the realization that their world was indeed protected by his will. They went on to form frenzied militias, made up of the most passionate of the faithful, charging out alongside the Templars, wearing little more than rags, though this mattered not, for they were shielded by the Emperor and in the presence of his angels. The Templars themselves welcome such acts, and though they understand that the feeble flock of humanity will likely die in their attempts at greatness, they know that the God Emperor will welcome them as martyrs and guide their souls in death. Conversely, those who dare to live the life of an apostate, those who harbor the disgusting taint of the warp, or those abominable aliens who lurk within the darkness of the void, will be shown no mercy and will be relentlessly purged with flame and sword. There can be no forgiveness amongst the stars, and their crusade will surely reign eternal. But for as long as the enemies of mankind still draw breath, then the Templars know that there can be no peace. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this investigation into the Zealous Templars in its entirety. But as I close this chapter once more, I must once again bid each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.